Good morning, everyone. So as many of you know, I just got back from Colorado. Had a good, uneventful trip for the most part. Flew out of Indianapolis and got there in plenty of time. Everything's going great, and because I fly enough, I get to get on the plane early. I guess that's the perk that they give. So I get to pick my seat before most anybody else does. And I'm waiting to get on the airplane, and in front of me, there becomes a little bit of an altercation. The man is trying to get on the airplane that's right in front of me, doesn't speak English very well, at least it would seem, and he's trying to get on, and he's trying to say that his brother has his ticket on the airplane. The airline associate who is there at the counter there, she says, no, you can't get on the plane without a ticket. You need to go over to the counter for customer service and they'll get you taken care of. And he's arguing with her. And then finally he kind of takes a step to the side and she begins to scan my ticket when he tries to like run on the airplane. And all of this becomes this big, like she like blocks him out, almost tackles him. And I've never had that kind of excitement before. Getting on an airplane, I was like, well, this is getting real, really fast. And you can tell she's super emotional and, you know, this is a tense moment. She calls for security to help her, and this guy pulls out like an air marshal badge. And it turned out the big reveal was that this was a test. And I didn't even know airlines did these things or that the TSA or whatnot, but just to make sure that nobody could sneak on the airplane. They were trying to make sure that their policies were doing right. Well, it was a big reveal, and it startled a lot of us. We're like, okay, well, wow, I'm glad this wasn't some terrorist incident or, you know, in little Indianapolis. But this was something that they planned for. It was kind of funny because later then, I sat up on the very front. And it was a full flight, so every seat was going to be taken. Didn't matter if you had a middle seat or not. And you kind of hope that you'll have somebody who's nice and everything to sit next to you. But sure enough, like right before the door closes, so I'm thinking maybe I do have a middle seat, this lady gets on who just is mean. And there was no way around it. She's belligerent. And again, I watched as our flight team had just kind of gone through that stress. And she missed all that because she just like rushed on at the last minute. Right before they closed the doors. And I was concerned because there are points when she's like, I'm not putting my mask on. I'm not doing what you tell me to do. And I was like, I'm not sure today's the day for that. So I thought my second reveal was going to see her escorted off the airplane. But nevertheless, she was still on it for the whole flight and had lots and lots of negative things to say the rest of the trip. Thankfully, it's not a long flight. But this idea of the big reveal, it's a big part of movies. Some of the best movies have the best reveals, or we kind of are surprised by who the villain or who the hero might be. We're surprised at how the plan comes together. For Beth and I think it was maybe even on our honeymoon, it was an older movie that was on TV that we watched. It was one of those whodunit movies, but was kind of funny about it. It's called Drowning Mona. And what was the big reveal in that movie, you're kind of trying to think, well, who did it? Who's the murderer? Well, it turned out they all wanted to be. So it was one of those where, like, everybody tried, but only one was successful. So Mona was not a nice person in that movie. But the big reveal is when we kind of find everything out and we see what the master plan was. As we look at Joseph's story and what Linda had just read to us, we see that there's a big reveal to the brothers of who Joseph is. They thought he was an assistant to Pharaoh, a high-ranking official, but now they realize this is their brother. It's a big reveal. But the bigger reveal is truly not that Joseph is their brother. The big reveal for us, and what I think we need to absorb from the text today, is the big reveal is how God had planned this all along. And Joseph's understanding of that and the way that Joseph responds, I think, is a really important piece to how the story finishes out and how things go. And so this morning we're going to be looking at the big reveal, not just of Joseph revealing to his brothers who he was, but God revealing how he had worked through this entire plan. So the first thing I want us to look at this morning is how Joseph embraced his humanity. Genesis chapter 45 and verses 1 and 2. Then Joseph could no longer control himself before all his attendants, and he cried out, "Have everyone leave my presence." So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers, and he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him, and Pharaoh's household heard about it. Later we see in verse 14, then he threw his arms around his brother Benjamin and wept, and Benjamin embraced him, weeping. And he kissed all his brothers, and he wept over them. See, for the Egyptian people, what Joseph had just done was kind of a no-no, especially for somebody in royalty. And we shouldn't be too surprised. Have you ever watched, I don't understand why it's such a big deal, but when one of the royals gets married or divorced or whatever happens, it makes not just national news, but you would think that, I mean, every channel is that. You just flip through the channels, and again, I don't have a lot of channels, but the ones I have would all be the royal wedding or whatever. And it's these momentous occasions where most families get emotional, and you see the royal family is just very stodgy. You know, they're very stoic. And it's because of this impression they want to give that they are beyond emotion. And we've seen this from almost every royal ruling class throughout history. They're allowed to show anger, but controlled anger in the right environment. But all of this love and tears and emotion, that's generally shoved to the side. And Egypt was so much that way. And it's interesting because as you look at this passage, it goes on and it shares not only did he get emotional, which could have gotten him in trouble, but that the Pharaoh found out about it. So did his entire household. So in many ways, Joseph's taking a risk here. It's probably the reason that he had his attendants, all of those leave his presence as he has this emotional moment with his brothers. But he embraced it. He embraced his humanity, even though it was risky, even though it could have cost him, even though it was frowned upon. Joseph embraced it. Joseph wept so loudly that the Egyptians and all Pharaoh's household heard him. I think it's important to understand that humanity is something that God blesses as well. When God made us, earlier in the book of Genesis, we see that story. What does God say? He says that his creation is good. Our humanity is good. It is so good that God puts his son, Jesus Christ, into a human form. And one of the most profound scriptures comes from the death of Lazarus when we see just two words that move the entire page. Jesus wept. Our tears are so precious to God that in Revelation we see they're kept in a jar, the way that we would keep perfume. And it's not because he delights in our pain that led to the tears. It's because those tears, he loves us so much, those tears are precious to him. Again, the way that we might have our finest perfume. Humanity is something that God created, and our emotions are something that God has made holy when they're in the proper context. It's okay to be emotional. And it's okay to embrace our humanity. There was a lot of buildup to this moment. There was a lot of pain that came to this moment. And Joseph doesn't shy away from it. He embraces it. He feels it. And that's important. Because we've learned a few things on the scientific side about what happens to us when we don't feel our feelings. We do something else with them. We have to. For people like me that might be a little overweight, we eat our feelings sometimes. Other times we divert our feelings and sadness becomes anger. Anger kind of covers over all of that. It becomes destructive. We can bury our feelings deep down inside and they'll become migraine headaches. They'll become high blood pressure. They'll become other forms of dysfunction. But Joseph doesn't do any of those things. He simply embraces who he is. And he cries and he weeps with his brothers. As God's unveiling your story, how are you at that? When things get hard, when they get emotional, do you feel like you have the space to cry? If you're in church and you're going through a hard time, do you feel like it's safe to tear up with us, your family, and your community? I know some of you feel that way. I see nods even from others. But we have to make sure that we're living authentically, that we're living our humanity before God, because He created us that way and He created it good. The next thing that we see is that Joseph embraced God's sovereignty. Verses 4 and 5, "Then Joseph said to his brothers, 'Come to me.' And when he had done so, he said, 'I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed, and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because I was to save the lives that God sent. It was so that I may save lives that God sent me ahead of you.'" So Joseph does something really important here. He doesn't sugarcoat what happened. He's really honest. He said, "What you did was wrong. What you did these things, but don't beat yourself up about it, because what you meant for harm, God meant for good." Joseph is able to really embrace the sovereignty of God in what happened. And I really believe it's what allowed him to have the safety to show emotions. Because if he didn't believe in the sovereignty of God, if he didn't understand that it wasn't Pharaoh who raised him up, it wasn't because of Pharaoh that he was where he was, it was because he was right where God wanted him. That he had safety and security to be himself. If he was there serving at the whim of Pharaoh, then he could be knocked down just as quickly as he was raised up. But he was there because God had him there. And God isn't capricious. God's plan is solid. Again, Joseph doesn't sugarcoat, because he understood it was God's plan. Joseph's position in the deliverance of all his people, both Hebrew and Egyptian. Because remember, Joseph's living in both worlds. He's a Hebrew, and there's been some passages as we've covered here that aren't very nice to Hebrews. There's these little things about how the Egyptians didn't like to eat with Hebrews because they were kind of disgusting to the Egyptians. I mean, that's a little rough. But both people, the Hebrews and the Egyptians, they're both Joseph's people. He's a man who walks in both worlds. And this deliverance that was given both to the Egyptian and the Hebrew, that victory, it didn't belong again to Pharaoh. It wasn't Pharaoh's doing. It was God's dream to Pharaoh. It was God aligning the pieces of the cupbearer. It was God aligning the pieces of the jailer, of Potiphar, and all of that turmoil. It was God who sustained and protected Joseph when he was beaten and thrown in the pit and sold into slavery. See, Joseph has to clearly say, brothers, you may have done harm to me, but you didn't do this. This was way beyond you. And it was beyond Pharaoh, and it was beyond Potiphar, and it was beyond the jailer, and it was beyond the cupbearer. This was God's doing. I'm not responsible for it, and neither are you. And this is the important thing for us to understand about the sovereignty of God. He is either sovereign or he isn't. We can't give God credit for the good and then get him off the hook for the hard things we go through. God is either sovereign or he's not. If you're responsible for the good things that happen to you, you're also responsible for the bad things that happen to you. The good decisions, the bad decisions. And God has said and made very clear, the big reveal here is that God's plan all along, from the first day he gave Joseph the vision back home in his father's house, tent, really. When he saw his brothers and his parents bowing down to him, from that very first moment, God had put a plan in place. And God, in his sovereignty and in his power and his complete control, put all the pieces together, wove it together in a way that no man ever could. And he saved the Hebrews, but he also saved the people of Egypt. He saved the Canaanites. He saved all those in the ancient Near East because of what he did through Joseph. So now understanding that, seeing that, again, Joseph isn't afraid of Pharaoh. He isn't afraid to show his emotions because he knows that he's right where God had him. He's not afraid of his brothers because it wasn't their power that put him here. It was God's power. And he wasn't mad anymore at his brothers. We talked previous weeks, 2 weeks ago, about how he was able to forgive. And again, I don't know that he would be where he is today in our text if he hadn't forgiven so many years before. Because forgiveness had much more to do with Joseph than it did his brothers. But now, because of that forgiveness, and because he understood that this was all part of God's plan, he understood that God was in control, that God was sovereign, that he's able to embrace his brothers again. The success and the victory belongs to the Lord, but so do the painful steps along the way, the painful steps that got us there. And again, it was his unshakable belief in God's sovereignty that allowed Joseph to be himself and to bridge two worlds. I get asked a question that for many of you might seem like a weird question. When people know that I'm a pastor, one of the things I get asked a lot by my generation and younger generations is, oh, well, you're a pastor. Do you know anything about marriage? I'm like, well, I know a little bit about marriage. I've been married a few years, and I've performed quite a few weddings. I'm like, well, yeah, but why do people do it? And I'm like, what? Why do people get married? Well, because of course they get married, but it's made me think a little bit and kind of go through, like, why does God have us get married? Because we live in a culture that isn't so excited about it when so many marriages end in divorce. When we go down to the bus stop and we talk with the families, and I'm not trying to judge anybody, but the typical conversation around the bus stop is what the ex-husband or ex-wife or whatever isn't doing right. And it's all this drama. It sounds difficult. And it's led many who have grown up in a broken home or who have grown up seeing all of that strife and drama to ask the question, well, why do it? When we go back to God's original purpose for marriage, I think it's a little bit of what Joseph's feeling. It's one of those areas that gives us that safe place to be ourselves. See, if at any moment, if there's no promise made, if at any moment Your significant other could walk away when things get too weird or too real. You really can't be yourself, can you? You've got to put up a facade. It's just like things were when you were dating. But as many of you know who have been married, it doesn't take long after the honeymoon for you to realize who you're really married to. And honestly, as you see a reflection back, who you really are. And that safety doesn't happen without the promise, without the commitment that's there. Well, the truth is, for us to be ourselves in life, it really, we have to have God's covering and His sovereignty for us to be able to do that too. Joseph is able to be himself. He's able to stand tall and stand strong and do what God called him to do because he knows that God's in control. He doesn't fear anyone else. And his reward, when the news reached Pharaoh's palace that Joseph's brothers had come, Pharaoh and his officials were what, angry? These are Hebrews. These are people they've already said in our scripture, they're gross, we won't even eat with them. No, because of their deep love for Joseph, because of their deep respect for Joseph, Pharaoh and all his officials were pleased. Joseph is, even later in the passage, when he's talking about bringing his father up, he's trying to put this plan together that might be acceptable to Pharaoh to have his family and their families. It's a lot of people. It's all of these households and these flocks that would be coming in. And he's thinking, maybe you could be on the outskirts and we could do it this way. And Pharaoh comes and offers a completely better deal. Pharaoh's like, no, come. You're a part of us now. If you are Joseph's family, you're our family too. God's sovereignty. He's already moving the pieces. He's already rolling out the red carpet. And finally, this morning, we see that Joseph embraced his community. Verse 9, now hurry back to my father and say to him, this is what your son Joseph says, God has made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down to me and don't delay. So let's be honest. Many of you, many of us, I'll put myself in the same group, have struggled a lot to forgive, much less than Joseph does here, of his brothers. And I think sometimes because of what his brothers have done, we give Dad, we give Jacob a pass too. Many of us have struggled long and hard to forgive less than what Joseph forgave. But Joseph, as he's forgiven not just his brothers here as he kisses them, he's also forgiven his father. He wants to see his father so bad. But let's remember, it would be easy for any of us in that position to say, well, Dad, why didn't you believe me when I had my vision? You remember, he has his vision, he shares it with his father, and his father is like, don't talk about that anymore. You expect your mom and I to bow down before you too? Not just your brothers? Sure, in that jail cell, Joseph may have asked, why didn't my dad come looking for me? He just assumed I was dead. He never came and found me. He never even looked for me. He could have been more supportive. He should have. He didn't. But Joseph, he embraces this community that has been imperfect, this community that has hurt him, that has sinned against him, because it was his community, because it was his family. If you look hard enough, I don't care how perfect a church is. I don't care how wonderful the people are. There are reasons to avoid community. I think there are many more reasons to embrace it, but if we look for them, you will find reasons to avoid community. Sometimes we just don't feel like being with other people. Other times we're well aware of the fact that we have a penchant for gossip, that sometimes those salacious details are too good not to share, that sometimes those people we are in community with, they have a bad day, they have a hard time, and they disappoint us. There are days that you will walk into your community, your family, and you will be desperately needing to unburden yourself only to find yourself dumped upon. Right? We've all been there. Living in community isn't easy, and it's far from perfect. But Joseph still embraces this imperfect community. And in doing so, God uses him to do something spectacular. See, in Joseph, we get one of the early pictures of the promise that God made to Abraham. That promise that his descendants would not only be many, but that at one point they would be a blessing to the world. This promise was given to Abraham, and just after that promise, what does Abraham do, if you remember? He goes and he lies to Pharaoh at the time. And this might be part of why the Egyptians didn't like Hebrew people very much. He lies to Pharaoh and he said, Sarah's not my wife, she's my sister. And as Pharaoh's like, oh great, she can become one of my wives now, God curses the Egyptian people with plagues. Not quite like the plagues we see later. Those are way more epic when we look at Exodus. But hardship and plagues nonetheless. So where Abraham was told that he would become a blessing to the nations around him, he became a curse. And here, Joseph, he becomes a man who can bridge two worlds. He's able to bridge the religious world. He's able to have relationship with God, to have a firm vertical relationship with God, but he's also able to get the horizontal relationship with his community, with those around him. And when you can do both, you get to become an ambassador of God. You get to be his hands and feet, and you get to become a blessing to those around you. Worship team, you can begin to come forward. It's a hard balance. It's one that I watch my kids struggle with. It's one that I struggled with when I was younger. It's one I struggle with today. I'm sure you've heard the expression that you can be so close to the world that you're of no heavenly good. But you can also have your heart so high up in heaven that you're of no worldly good. And we have a tendency to embrace one of those two. We say, Jesus was a friend to the sinners, so I'll go be a friend to the sinner. And then in the end, we don't look anything different from the sinner. We act and we talk and we do just what they're doing. We get pulled into the mud. Or we say, I'm going to be spiritual and I'm going to worship God. And I'm going to spend all of my time at church and at Bible study and prayer meeting. That's all I'm going to do. And it's wonderful and we build this great relationship with God, but we're not real useful to anyone around us because we're never not at church. It's one of my biggest struggles with Christian college. I loved my time at Bible college, but there weren't a lot of people to witness to that didn't believe like you did. And Joseph here, he does such a great job embracing community so that he can be used by God to be a blessing, not just to his brothers, but to the Egyptian people. As he's embracing his humanity, as he's living out God's sovereignty, he's doing it all within earshot, within the sight of the Egyptian people. He's become a living testimony to the power of his God. And we can be too. We don't always know what God's doing. but I think we can have confidence that He's doing. And the day will come for each of us when there is some type of big reveal, when God makes His plan known. And when He does, I hope that we can follow Joseph's example so that in the end we can be a blessing, not just to ourselves, but to others. That we can live out that promise that God gave Abraham, that his descendants would not only be plentiful, but that they would bless the world. Let's worship together.